they want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. You're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining me today is John Cowherd. John, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Thank you for coming on, and thank you for starting us off on a great year of new On the Commons shows. We have a whole lot to talk about. I think we've discussed about six shows worth of material, but let's see if we can take a bite out of this and get started.
Cool.
So what's going on in the world of HOAs?
Well, I mean, I think that it's an exciting time to be involved in this process for some of your listeners who haven't heard me on the show before.
Everybody's heard you, John. I keep hearing from them.
Well,
get John back. I like him.
Well, I'm an attorney. I practice a few miles up the road from this radio station, and I practice in D.C. and Virginia, and the focus of my practice is real estate and construction, with a strong emphasis on property owners' rights, in particular filling a need that's very desperately needed in Virginia and throughout the country, which is experienced lawyers who can go to court and go to bat for homeowners who are not simply general practice attorneys who don't regularly represent the industry lobby and the association board side of things. And it's an exciting time because homeowners are becoming much more engaged, becoming much more interested, they're becoming much more educated about what is being done to them, what is happening to them with respect to their mortgages, their HOAs, construction issues. There has been, the contribution of this wonderful program. There's been quite a few articles written, not only in activist blogs, but also by journalists in that have received national attention.
Right.
And so it's exciting to be practicing in this area at a time in which people are kind of waking up to a lot of these things that we've been talking about.
Have you noticed that people are coming together on the same page? Because one of the things, I've been doing this for such a long time. One of my frustrations has been everybody's got their own little peeve, and so they're all working at cross purposes, and sometimes they drop the fight, and they start fighting each other.
Right, right. I think that once you have experienced firsthand, either through yourself or through a loved one or through a friend or a client, of them being bullied by an HOA or by a property manager or having the association model, so to speak, come down on them and to infringe upon their property rights and their quality of their life, it's no surprise that a lot of people have become engaged in this, that they're writing articles on the internet, that they're active on social media, they're talking to their legislators, they're starting different educational programs. And there's a tremendous amount of energy, which is really cool. And it's really fun to watch because as an attorney, I actually learn a lot from listening to folks who aren't doing the stuff professionally. Sometimes
the people out in the trenches.
Yeah, sometimes people out in the trenches, so to speak, are thinking about things and proposing ideas that, you know, perhaps in law school, a professor once said that, you know, it's always been this way, so that's the way it is. But and maybe he's not. Maybe that's not true. Maybe it hasn't always been that way. Maybe that's not the only way that things could work. I talk to a lot of folks who reach out to my law firm, and it's and I'm able to help quite a few of them, and I've noticed that there is that there are a lot of legislators in Virginia and across the country who are very interested in these community association issues. They come up in just about every legislative session in each state across the country, and I've often thought that it would be cool if in each state there was something of a committee or a network of homeowners and professionals and legislators who were interested in these property rights issues and were kind of working kind of more as a team or an interpersonal as a network and trying to fight some of the legislation that is periodically introduced by the industry lobby.
Well, I think anything that's ever been introduced by the industry lobby has been to empower HOAs, and quite often the homeowners will look at that and they think, oh yeah, well that's okay, we'll accept binding ADR or something stupid like that, which benefits the industry, it benefits the association, it benefits CAI, it benefits the members of that lobby, of CAI's lobby organization, but it never ever benefits the homeowners, who think that it's going to cost them less money, who think that it's not going to be so terrible, who think that by having it binding that it's a done deal. What they don't realize is that they're getting shafted.
Right.
And they need to understand that, because a lot of organizations and groups out there are fighting for it, homeowners, and they will not listen. They just will not listen.
A while back there was, it wasn't always the case that property owners associations and condos could bring fines against homeowners just on their own and act as the prosecutor, judge, jury, and
legislator
as well on these things. It used to be that if an association was of the opinion that an owner had violated the covenants, that they had to go to court and they had to get a judge, a member of the independent judiciary, to agree with them and to render a judgment, and for that to survive the appeal process. Now, with these fines, you know,
it's abused.
Yeah, the nice way to put it would be it's streamlined, but it's not. And yes, it is true that homeowners don't have to hire an attorney to defend against a hearing by their architectural review committee or their board of directors, but it is. The process is not designed to work for them. So it's not, yes, it is cheaper in the sense that there are less, but it's cheaper because there are fewer things that they can do to defend themselves unless they decide to seek judicial review of it in the court system. And it's funny how these so-called due process hearings and fines and liens for the fines are presented to the public as a public service, when really, I guess they serve somebody, but
he's smiling, folks.
It's not really a good place to be if you're the party that's received that notice of violation in the mail or attacked to your door.
Why? I mean, I still cannot for the life of me get my brains wrapped around the fact that somebody has a right to decide whether or not you have a shed in your backyard and whether or not that shed can be painted or wood or metal or if you can paint flowers on it or if you can hang flower pots on it. What difference does it make? It's your shed. There's something about ownership, isn't there?
Right. Well, I mean, it would be... There's two separate questions there. I mean, the first is...
It's anger, John. Well,
it's anger. Yeah, well, I mean, should the covenants that speak to this issue even exist in the first place? That's one question. And then the second question is somebody, an owner, the board of directors, architectural review committee, feels that this covenant has been breached, then... How is this dispute resolved? How do you even go about deciding?
But why do we even get to the point of a dispute? Let's just eliminate that whole
I'm going to play
thing.
The devil's advocate here just for a second, just for fun.
All right.
We're all friends here. But the beautiful thing about real estate is that, the basic idea behind real estate is that you have the freedom. There's a freedom associated with that property, right? You can sell it. You can use it to borrow money. You can subdivide it. You can do this and you can do that because that's your property. So
it's called ownership.
Right. It's called ownership. And so I do think that people, if somebody, hypothetically speaking, wants to give up some right to have a pink shed, then that's their, you know, should they not be allowed to do that because it's a bad idea? That's like a different question. I think that the approach that the courts had for hundreds of years before HOA legislation arose was that, yes, homeowners, property owners do have the right to make covenants that restrictive covenants, but that they have to meet very strict requirements in order to be valid, and two, they're construed strictly and not broadly in favor of whoever is trying to enforce the covenants. I mean, that what is crazy about the system that we have now is that by many people, the HOA covenants are viewed expansively, that because there's something somewhere that says that you agreed that there is going to be this board of directors in your neighborhood, that is the most important principle that colors everything, that the limited nature of the board of directors' power is something that just kind of gets forgotten. It gets lost because what's being focused on is the fact that this organization has been created that has the potential to have some very powerful weapons at its disposal under state law, but it hasn't always been that way, and it doesn't have to be that way.
You know, you talk about covenants, and if you look at the covenants before, it'll specify that, let's go back to the garden shed, it has to be wood, it has to be metal, it has to be no bigger than this, it has to be no bigger than that. Arguably, you agreed, but nobody sat down and said, oh yeah, I agree to this shed. It's just part and parcel of a whacking great big document that's everything's thrown in there, and then it's, oh, but you agreed to this. But here's where it gets a little, where everything gets a little muddied, because then it says that you have to get permission from the Architectural Control Committee or whatever your governing documents call it. And that's when Joe Blow down the street decides that it has to be lime green, even though lime green may be the worst color in the world. But that becomes a covenant that you agree to. No, it doesn't. That's not the covenant.
Right.
So there are all these petty, nitpicky little things that are added on by the board, by the association, and you agree to allow them to do whatever they wanted to do because it's in the governing documents.
Well, what tends to happen is that a lot of people don't even have a copy of the covenants at their disposal. What is very common, and you don't have to look at too many things on social media or in the reported cases in the court and across the country or in articles, is that quite often you'll have the board of directors, a property manager, and owners, and they are running a company or they're dealing with a company with a huge budget, and there may be hundreds or thousands of owners in there, and nobody really understands what it is that has been agreed to. Like, I think that there is a strong desire by many people for a level of standardization across community associations statewide and across the country so that they know, so that the social contract, so to speak, is something that's generic, whereas in reality it's not generic at all. That there's a packet of papers recorded in the courthouse someplace that sets out what the covenants are, what authority the board of directors has, and if it's not in there, then they don't have it. For many people, trying to make sense out of these things, to make sense out of the statutes, to make sense out of the covenants, it's just overwhelming, especially when you have, when it is a part of an interpersonal dispute amongst people who are neighbors and perhaps maybe have known each other for several years, and things take on a level of acrimony that, you know, it's not working.
Thank you, John. It's not working. I mean, it's very simple. It's really not working. I mean, you said it all in just those three words. You don't need a tome.
Right, and people want it to be like a town, but it's just not that.
It's not. It's a neighborhood.
Right.
And you should be neighbors. And CAI likes to call them communities. They're anything but communities. There's nothing in common. People don't have things in common. They don't work together. They don't want the same things. Actually, they do. They want to be left alone. And how much friendlier would it be if people were on the same level as opposed to having this guy peering into your backyard trying to decide whether or not you can have roses or if you must have tulips? It's just this level of sheer stupidity. Did you get that garden hose approved by the ACC? John, these are real examples.
Right.
Somebody's dusting your mailbox to see if you've dusted. How many times do you dust your mailbox?
You wouldn't want to look. If they looked at my mailbox, people probably would be in horror. But
but people have been fined for having dusty mailboxes and dusty roofs, especially someplace where it doesn't rain a whole lot. Is it who thinks these things up, and why are they in charge?
Well, you know. You can't make any money if you can't. How are you going to pay? How are you going to? If you've got a staff and you're a property manager and you have a contract to do different things, then you're not going to make any extra money if you don't send out the violations, right? So.
But do we need a whole staff? Do we need to make something as simple as your home such a complicated and expensive deal?
You can put. There's all sorts of things that are put into corporate documents, into real estate documents, where and a lot of these things are disregarded. They're ignored. They're ignored. But what makes this a problem? I mean, you can have let's say you have a covenant that says that your mailbox has to be perfect and meet certain specifications. It's not. The question becomes, what's the remedy for that? What is what does the association have to do in order to, if they have a problem with that? And, you know, the what I don't like about fines, one of the things I don't like about fines is that it allows, there is a set dollar amount that is assessed for the fine, and that is irrespective of proof of actual damages.
Right.
So it's just an arbitrary number that has been, that the law assigns to something that's not
imposed.
It's not something that's been proven. And there really isn't any way to prove a damage associated with something like that because it is aesthetic. You know, you could have a community where people would be offended if your mailbox looked nicer than everybody else's. They feel like you're showing them up or something.
But it's so petty, John. It's so stupid and so petty. There's so much going on in the world, and we're worried about a little dust on somebody's mailbox.
Well,
what is it?
I mean, if you look at the way that covenants were enforced 100 years ago, so to speak. Of course, the world was a lot different 100 years ago. But a lot of the baseline principles are still applied today. The judges have traditionally been extremely skeptical of enforcing covenants because they are contrary to the free alienability of land.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to enforce a covenant, the HOA or whoever it is has to jump through all sorts of hoops and dot their I's and cross their T's and take the case to trial and win and not have it reversed on appeal because of a T that wasn't dotted. And that the great thing about that old approach to covenants was that people didn't go after each other's mailboxes because it wasn't worth doing. It wasn't worth pursuing. It wasn't an activity that was rewarding. At best, you got a war over nothing. And I think that's for a lot of these problems, if we still had that old system, that it would solve a lot of problems. Because if something was really important, then it would make sense. It would be the judge would understand that it's necessary, and it would be worth people devoting resources to pursuing it.
There was a story, and I heard about this when I was doing my real estate classes. We're going back a number of years. This was before the Dulles area was developed. And in the old days, people put covenants on their own properties. You didn't put a covenant on a property and sell it to someone else with less freedoms than you enjoined. So if you had unfettered freedom on your property, you didn't restrict those freedoms and take away those rights before you transferred title. Well, it seems there was an old farmer years and years and years ago who had this property, and he was going to be subdividing it for his kids. But he didn't really want, he wanted a certain setback. So he put a covenant on his land saying that they would have a certain setback. Over the years, that land was sold, and of course the Dulles Corridor started being developed. The developer came and bought a chunk of land and built this row of townhouses, and somebody discovered this covenant.
Right.
So they did take it to court, and the judge upheld it, from what I remember. And the developer had to tear down the the covenant, or
right.
tear down the townhouses. So, I mean, that was, all right, so that was something somebody put on a long time ago, but that actually went to court. The guy wasn't fined.
Right.
You know, it was something that had some kind of judicial review.
Right. And I just think that if you have a choice, if you're a homeowner, or if you're a prospective homeowner, let's say you're just looking and shopping for a home, an enormous amount of power is being given to a community association and resources, and they're given the task of enforcing certain covenants. And let's assume that somebody is going to have to be the decider in a dispute over this. Do you want that decider to be the opposing party? Do you want to give the opposing party in your case the power to act as the prosecutor, the judge, and the jury? It doesn't make sense, right?
No, it doesn't.
But that's what you have with these due process hearings and fines.
Yep.
There's also a new approach that is being developed now, which exists in some form or another in many states, which is having a regulatory board that sits in the state capital and that can hear certain complaints brought by owners about their HOAs, and they will have a limited jurisdiction to answer certain questions, or perhaps that board has its own discretion to try to bring its own legal cases or not about violation of state HOA law. These boards typically are the product of industry lobbying, and in many cases they have a lot of folks on the board who are part of the industry or have ties to the HOA industry. Or it's been explained to me that in many of these cases they'll have these state HOA regulatory boards who will have homeowners on the boards, but the homeowners who are supposed to be the advocates for the owners don't even show up because the meetings are at 10 o'clock on a weekday, and they usually get outvoted when they do go, and they don't get paid for being there, but they don't have an economic incentive for being there, except perhaps maybe they get a per diem or something like that. Do you really want to have a question submitted to a regulatory agency that meets that description? You know, probably not, because it's like being a criminal defendant and knowing that the judge hearing your case was a prosecutor for 20 years before he became a judge. You know, if you knew that, you probably would not be excited, or you would probably not, your hopes would probably not be encouraged once that judge came out and sat on the bench, even though he may be very smart and very brilliant, but it's something that happens. So I think that the third alternative is really the best, which is having a lot of this stuff decided by an independent judiciary that is comprised of generalists. The judge, whether it's a small claims court judge or a justice of the peace or a federal judge or whoever it is not a specialist in HOA law, and that should make people feel more comfortable because they know that this is not someone who is going to have
a bias.
Yeah, have a bias, and it's really is contrary to to way that a lot of people think, but it really is. I think that it's a contrarian view. But I'm the more I deal with these things, the more I become convinced that that's who you want.
You know, I went with some friends who sued their association pro se, and they took it to basically traffic court. And so we all went to provide moral support, and they laid out The Roots knew what they were doing. They laid out their case in front of them, and the judge had no idea of HOAs, no idea of HOA law, none of that. I mean, this was totally foreign to him. And he's sitting there scratching his head. He said, they did what? And he kept going through this, and he said, that's ridiculous. And he found for them. And so you're absolutely right. I mean, most people would say, oh, my God, you can't go in front of somebody who doesn't know what they're talking about. But this guy looked at this stuff and decided it was so out of the norm. And he was horrified by what he heard. And he said, forget it. Get out.
Well, you know, there's a lot of discussion about, is what my HOA is doing or in –
can they do that?
Can they do that? Is it constitutional?
That's what we start the show off with. Can
they
do that?
Can they do that? Yeah. And there is a quote which is attributed to the late Justice Antonin Scalia, which something to the effect that it's the structure of the constitutional structure of the government that protects people's constitutional rights primarily. Mm-hmm. That you are protected if you have separation of powers. If it's the legislature, which is a group of generalists, or maybe they're not generalists, but they're specialists in different things, but they're drawn from all sorts of all walks of life, enacting legislation, that's better for you than if you have a regulatory agency enacting regulations, and the regulatory agency is dominated by some special interest which is not aligned with your own. And
good point.
And the same thing with the judiciary, as we've just been talking about. You know, you want the judiciary. You don't want a judge who also has another job as something else that's where he has an economic tie with something. So the general trend in the U.S. is towards ever-increasing growth of the administrative state, and this is presented to voters as a consumer protection. Sometimes it is, but
mostly it isn't.
And yeah, most folks are overwhelmed with trying to keep track of what their own HOA is doing, what their own bank is doing, and the idea that they would also focus on what a regulatory agency is doing and making public comments and going to hearings in the state capitol is just not realistic, right?
So we spent most of the time talking about all the problems. What are the solutions? Do we have any solutions? Do we have any ideas?
Well, I think on a personal level, you have to take care of yourself. I mean, if you live in a community association, you need to have an up-to-date, you need to have a box or a folder or a binder where you have your governing documents, your bylaws, your covenants, this and that, what are purported to be the rules and regulations. So if you end up in a conversation with people, at least you know what you're talking about. Or if you have to seek out the advice of a professional, you're prepared to do that. And I think a lot of problems are solved by simply being aware, not simply when something bad happens, but by staying on top of things that are happening in your association on an ongoing basis. If you never go to any meetings, you never keep any records, you throw everything that you receive from your property manager in the trash can, and then all of a sudden, I don't know, like something really bad happens, and you're trying to figure out, you know, you don't even know who your board members are. Maybe there's no website. Maybe there's no public record of who do I even go to talk to? If you remain educated about what's happening and you talk to your neighbors, you go to meetings, and you keep an eye out for what's occurring, then sometimes just simply doing that can avoid all sorts of different problems. And but if it doesn't, then at least you, if you have to defend or bring some kind of legal issue, then you're prepared, and you're prepared, and you're not going to be steamrolled simply because you don't, you know, you don't know the facts or have the documents, and someone is going to hold those documents or pieces of information hostage from you because they can, you know, they can use that as a part of their.
So you've kind of zoomed in on the personal level,
right,
one on one. But if we zoom way out and we take the whole picture, what can we do as homeowners across the country instead of fighting one battle at a time?
Right.
How can we just say, hey, is this really the way we want to live?
Well, I mean, I personally, what I do is I have my law practice. What I do for people is,
yeah,
I have my
no,
law
I,
practice.
No, I understand.
And that's
but
that's
you're doing one, yeah.
Right. Then and that if you are someone who is experiencing some, perhaps one of their neighbors is flooding water into their unit or onto their property, they may, you know, if someone were, if a property rights activist were, if they were to approach someone and they were to be told that, wow, you being flooded by so and so is terrible, we need to abolish condominiums, that might satisfy them on some level, but it doesn't do anything about the water. The water is still flooding.
That's true.
So
that's very true.
I don't, in the big picture, there's all sorts of things that can be done. I mean, I think the main problem is that we have a lot of statutes out there that have been presented to the public as there to protect owners that are really not, they don't do that. And there's a lot of things that could abuses that could be solved by simply repealing certain legislation. But right now, it would be great if a lot of bad bills that are introduced are simply blocked. And that in itself is...
Well, that's been pretty much what Frank and I have been doing, is just trying to block some of this stuff. And in a lot of cases, we have succeeded. We've never tried to increase the number of bills that are out there, the number of laws that are not being enforced or with no adult supervision. We've just said, hey, no,
right.
We're just not going to do that. But I still have to wonder, we're still building these things. Have we not learned anything over the last 4 or 5 decades and decided, wait a minute, maybe this really isn't the direction we want to go?
Right,
so
right.
So you need a covenant to protect someone from building a gas station in the middle of the neighborhood. Why anybody would do that, I don't know. But I don't have a problem with that. And that would be something that would be fairly simple and easy to do. But why do we have to get way down into the nitty-gritty? And why do we have to get down to the point where we're weighing dogs, where we're measuring blades of grass, where we're comparing home numbers, sizes, giving mailboxes the white glove test, and just harassing kids? I mean, we've just taken it beyond anything that's rational and reasonable.
Right.
And I want to stop all of that. If there's a reason for it, fine. I have no problem with that. But if there is no reason for it, do away with it.
Well, you know, you could introduce. Abolishing HOAs let's just play around with that idea for a second. There's two different approaches to it. One is to say, okay, well, let's just hypothetically speaking, what would it take to abolish a particular homeowners association or homeowners association statewide? Well, you'd probably have to use the power of eminent domain in order to do something about the web of property rights and of common areas that are at issue, because you don't have, you're not going to get 100% consensus on terminating the entity, and even if you, and we've seen how disastrous condominium termination statutes have been in terms of oppressing the few people who are on the receiving end of a lot of those abuses. So using eminent domain in order to protect property rights in the big picture doesn't seem to be, I don't think anyone's really proposing that.
I'm not even thinking that, and I'm not even thinking about terminating them.
Right.
What I would like to see is some choices so that people who don't want to live in them have an option of some place to go. But when you look at why we have HOAs, initially they were designed to provide local municipalities with free tax money. And to have something concrete, they provided common areas and amenities. And so you need an HOA to maintain those common areas, to maintain and administer the recreational facilities, the swimming pools, the tennis courts, whatever other wonderful stuff you have. Why can't we separate those out? If the reason we have an HOA is to protect the property or to maintain the common areas, streets, lights, and all of that, that's one thing. But why do we have to get into the governance and dictate whether you need to get permission to have a certain garden hose there, whether you need to get a dog approved, whether you need to, I know of condominiums where people have a dress code. You cannot walk across the hall in flip-flops and ask your neighbor for a cup of sugar. And if you do, you're fined. So let's get rid of the governance. That's where all the HOA money is being made, right?
Right. I'm just trying to think of
why we shouldn't do that.
No. I'm thinking. This is not the first time that these questions have been. We've talked about these things on previous shows, and there are questions that are. They've been raised in different articles and things, and I agree with you that the association model is designed to essentially move certain things off of people's accounts payable. Just for lack of a better word, it's so the developer can convince the locality that someone is going to maintain some roads or other infrastructure, so that the locality doesn't have to pay for those things either, that they're being pushed off on the future purchasers of the property. So I mean, that's the real public purpose of all this stuff. But this is a consumer purchase. This is something. These are properties that are being purchased by people so that they have a home, they have investment, they have a place to live, they have some privacy, and they're not simply making this tremendous financial sacrifice so that someone can tell them to put on closed-toed shoes. There seems to be a huge
disconnect,
and we're told that HOAs are very popular because everyone is buying them, but we aren't.
Who's telling you that?
We aren't being told that people are buying them because they really don't see. Trying to find an alternative is very difficult, or is in many cases cost prohibitive, and they're choosing these things because it's what's available. And that's not really a consumer choice. That's not someone choosing an HOA home over a non-HOA home because they like the covenants, or because they have read a lot of articles on the internet about HOAs and they like what they hear and they want to get elected on the board of directors because they want to be fashion police. So, I mean, personally, my approach to this is to when folks come to me, I do not, tell them that I would like to see HOAs abolished, because that doesn't help them with their individual problem, which is not, having HOAs abolished isn't going to solve any problems for them. But I do wish that, I do think it would be really cool if there were stronger interpersonal networking connections between different people on a state-by-state basis who are interested in these things, so that property rights advocates don't get burnt out. We haven't really talked about that much, but I think it's very easy for someone who becomes interested in these things to start talking to people and to start reading things and writing things and engaging in different educational activities and advocacy, and to very quickly become burnt out because of all sorts of all the challenges. And I think that the answer is that if there's grassroots networking that goes on, that more can be accomplished. I think that's pretty simple.
I think it is very simple. I just want to say that I know that we cannot abolish existing HOAs. And so, Evan McKenzie keeps telling me, you can't do that, Joe, you can't do that. I understand. Some people want them, they're there. But I think they're way, way too powerful. And I think you have to have options. And as Evan said in one of the interviews, he said, nobody sits down and says, check, I agree that I'm giving up my right to free speech. Check, I agree that I'm giving up my right to pick out my own curtains. Check, I agree that... And individually going through and agreeing to this, yet we tell them, blanket, you've agreed to everything without really knowing that. I think you need to be educated. I think that's what you're doing with your blog, and we'll talk about that. That's what I've been trying to do. You're right about getting burned out. I've been doing this for a very, very long time. I used to get very chastised because I no longer write as much as I used to write. I did get burned out. I don't want to do it. And I don't want to go through and argue the same points all the time, over and over and over again. So I do this. This information's out there. Anybody who wants to hear it can go and hear it. It's not just my ideas. It's everybody's ideas, whether they agree with me or not. It's out there. But I think you need to be educated. And part of being educated and going back down to the zeroing in is when the association gets a legal opinion from the association attorney, the homeowner sometimes will say, what do we, can I see that? And you're told, no, you can't, because that's privileged information. You've got 2 minutes if you want to talk about that. We're going to run out of time here.
Well, people have written hundreds and hundreds of pages and legal treatises about the attorney-client privilege, and people have written a lot about the attorney-client privilege in the community association context. Maybe I come back on sometime in the future and we talk about that. But I would say that really in most situations, a homeowner doesn't even need attorney-client privilege materials from their HOA, because I think that there's a lot of confusion about what the attorney-client privilege really means. What does it really protect? And it doesn't. Some people have are either saying or have been led to believe that the attorney-client privilege and the executive session power somehow give an association the authority to cloak everything that they do and say and all the records that they keep as confidential, except when they want to use that information against other people, against owners, against people that they deal with. That's just not what the attorney-client privilege says. That's not what the state statutes say about the kinds of information that owners are entitled to review. And all the time I submit document requests to opposing parties, whether it's to an HOA as a part of a inspection of books and records request, or whether it's in litigation discovery. And attorneys are asserting attorney-client privilege in all sorts of situations where it just has absolutely no... It's simply not appropriate. It doesn't apply. It's not... The attorney-client privilege applies when an attorney and their client, or the corporate representatives of their client, are seeking, requesting, giving, or anything within the limited type of communication, which is legal advice. And there's so much that goes on that doesn't fit within that narrow definition. And if someone is asserting that to all sorts of crazy requests, and it really is is the attorney running your organization?
HOA, and we're going back 25, 30 years now, my HOA was charging certain homeowners money that they were not allowed to charge them. So they got a legal profession, the legal opinion. The attorney said that although I understand why you're doing it, you're on less than legal concrete foundation, and basically covered himself. When we discovered that, we were not given that. Oh, the attorney said we could do it. The attorney didn't say you couldn't do it, but he didn't also say you could do it. But they went on, continued charging that. So there's so many,
right?
You know, well, there's so many things there, and it's just more convenient to hide it and lie than it is.
Well, you want, as an owner, you want that communication exchange to occur. You want the board to ask the lawyer, is this late charge collection, is it valid under, when you apply Virginia law to the covenants, is it valid? And the attorney says, if the attorney's answer is no, but you might be able to get away with it, then if the attorney's answer, I don't know what this is, what's going on in your HOA. But
I mean, this is all.
Yeah. If the answer is that it is not valid, it's only valid until you get caught, then then the owners want the board to hear that message. They want the board to receive.
Don't want the homeowners to.
The community association attorney doesn't have some, he's not some wizard who has this mystical, Gnostic understanding of community associations law, such that the only way that an owner can get access to this, special information, you know, like whether the late charge collections are valid under the covenants is something that you don't have to have one of those fancy letters after your name that some organizations are. Okay.
John, thank you so much. We are out of time. You'll have to come back to finish this. It's fascinating.
Well, it's always wonderful being on your show. So thank you.
Thanks, John. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.